Hello and welcome, Ducks fans, where and whenever you're watching or listening. Well, if you're listening, if you're listening, you probably can't see that me and Sam right now have on our masks. And by now, you probably already know that the Husky game has been canceled this week. And we had a very special episode planned out for you, as always. We're still going to let you see that at the end of this. But Sam, what's your reaction?
Well, excuse me. Let me pull my mask down. Well, I think that it's pretty clear that disappointment's the number one feeling that everybody's sharing right now. I don't think there's anybody who's excited that this game is being missed, except for if your colors are purple and gold, then you might just be happy to claim a North Crown without earning it. But the truth of the matter is, in these unfortunate, unprecedented times, we had to imagine that something like this would happen eventually. I think we were just talking about it relatively recently, how strange it was that Oregon was one of the only teams to not be affected, yet they made it the entire season without having a game changed, without having a game affected. So it was bound to happen. Oregon was due. Turns out to be the case. And as of right now, at least, it looks like the 2020 season will come to an abrupt and unfortunate end.
Well, looks like it. There's still plenty of things potentially possible. There's a potential of a crossover game. We're hearing things. Who knows, by the time even we release this episode on Friday, there could be more news of what's possible. But all things point ahead, whenever these Ducks do play again, I'm excited to see it still. But yeah, real missed opportunity, not just for them, but in all honesty, this is a missed opportunity for the Washington Huskies, because I don't think they're going to have as good an opportunity to get a win, especially in Autzen, in the next couple of years foreseeable. I mean, that's of all the things, you know, people have taken it a lot of ways, and we've been out there with you on Twitter. We appreciate it. We have a lot of our best fans out there, and their reactions have been cracking us up and keeping us positive. But again, we had a great show planned out for you. We're bummed about it. You know, but hey, the big thing is, you know, the season, we've been so lucky to see what we've seen so far, and to have no interruptions, because there are teams that right now, you know, I'm dating someone that's an Arizona State fan, and you look at their team and what they've had to go through this year. And if that were to happen to us, I can only imagine how upset fans would be after just two losses and seeing how mad people are. So who knows what's to come in the future, but I do know there's going to be a basketball game on Saturday still. And, you know, the women play the Civil War. Oh, I did it again. The Oregon State rivalry. Sorry. Another coin in there. We're going to keep that routine going until I can get off that. But we still got a great basketball season around. And you know what? Just because of this, next week, Once a Duck is going to be there with two guests. No matter if the Ducks play football or not, we're bringing you two guests next episode.
I think that's going to be a whole lot of fun to do, a whole lot of fun to have two guests on next week. I look forward to it. I also look forward to Once a Duck episodes to come throughout the upcoming season. Although there might not be football every week, there's still Oregon sporting events going on, still former Oregon athletes that we need to be talking to, and we will do our best to bring that to you.
Absolutely. And we're going to keep it out there for you guys, the fans. We want your guys' input as always. And out there is one of our favorites, Otis, at Now, wait a minute. He heard a rumor that the 2008 Husky football team is also attempting to retroactively cancel up to 12 games due to a possible COVID outbreak. And, you know, if any team really needs it, it's not this Husky football team this year. That team really could have used a couple forfeits. Oh, we're not calling it a forfeit, though, are we? It's a cancellation. Is that the official?
Yeah, it's a cancellation, but we all know what it is.
Yeah, well, if they do crown a – who knows if they even get to play against USC. All signs point to that they may have a 14-day quarantine period. The biggest thing here is, you know, it's a letdown by the Pac-12, especially if they don't respond to it, you know, right now, you know, and make some plans to kind of capture – and see something out of this season, because as soon as the playoff berth was out of place, like, you have no excuse not to possibly extend games. But then again, you're asking these players to extend their commitment beyond of what they've already had to sacrifice. And man, I'm mad this game's gone, but what a wild season. We said it from the beginning. I think that's the one thing we've predicted accurately, is this was going to be a crazy season. And if this is the end of it, well, I want to thank all our Ducks. And if it's not, well, we'll still continue to cover whoever they're playing next. We'll talk about in the next episode.
Nick, I look forward to being able to continue this show throughout this winter, throughout the off season, taking it all the way into next season. There's still so much to talk about, so much that's going to be going on as far as the University of Oregon is concerned. And I think that we're going to have a couple of fun things up our sleeves for people to see here in the next couple months.
Yeah, absolutely. Even if we don't get any more football games, we still have plans for you. We'll still be releasing next Friday. Then our schedule might change up a little bit. But either way, we hope you stick around. Make sure you stay to the end. We'll talk a little more men's and women hoops and start to transition into that season. But as it were, we recorded a fantastic episode covering our previously planned Husky Hate Week 2.0. Dubs Down double feature, but this year it's going to be the Washington Bows Out edition. And unfortunately, you know, that wastes a great episode, but we still give it to you, and you're still going to get to hear a great interview with Rose Bowl champion and still Rose Bowl champion Bryson Young. Hello and welcome, Duck fans. Where and whenever you're watching or listening, this is the Once a Duck podcast, where we bring you up to date with current and former University of Oregon athletes and give you never-before-heard stories about your favorite teams and moments in Duck history. We're right there with you, coming off this Cal loss, right there on Twitter at Once a Duck, or myself at JustFollow61, or my co-host Sam Tidrich-Schmidt. You're at 101 Samuel 101 TS, and it's been a rough week, and coming off that Cal loss, back-to-back losses for the first time in a long time. Sam, how are you holding up?
Meditation has been key, Nick. It's been a lot of calm app, a lot of good nature sounds in the background, focusing on breathing, just a lot of good calming techniques. Last week, I was definitely just absorbing the sadness that came with the loss. This week, it's about moving past. It's about growing. It's about learning, and it's about taking our experiences and becoming better for them. And I'm hoping that can happen going into this week.
Man, it really sounds like you've been taking your life manual to heart this season, Sam. I got to applaud you on that. Very, very nice. And coming out of our manual this week is very important quote: attitude is our best friend or our worst enemy. John C. Maxwell. And I'm glad to know that you're not letting it make your worst enemy. I think last week, a lot of us kind of let that Oregon State loss be our own worst enemy, including, you know, at times the Ducks offense in that second half.
That's one way to put it, Nick. I didn't think we were going to dive into the semantics of it as quickly as we are, but you know what? While we're here, we may as well. Oregon led the ball game 17-14 going into halftime, and Duck fans were sitting there going, you know what? It looked a little iffy at times, but this offense put two touchdowns on the board late in the second quarter, felt a little better about the situation, were able to see the Oregon offense the way that we like to see it. And I think it made everybody feel better going into the second half. Unfortunately, it also showed Wilcox exactly what he would need to see in order to stop it. And boy, did his squad do that. Oregon's offense, well, they laid a goose egg in the second half. 0 points and a loss that ended up being 21-17. The defense, well, they did a pretty good job this week. Normally, over this season, that's been something we've been complaining about, missed tackles, not being able to stop the run. Oregon actually did that very well this week, and they were prepared for it. They bounced back in that department. Unfortunately, the offense just couldn't hold up their own end.
Well, and you know, that's interesting you say that, Sam, because I know you're the stats guy, but I feel like the scoreboard is one of the only places that this offense really didn't come out and perform. You know, we still had a total of 368 yards. You know, we had, you know, a rushing game was down a little bit, it felt like, but we're still getting 6.1 yards a play. And like you said, our defense stepped up where they were most weak in the previous weeks, and that rushing defense held Cal to just 88 rushing yards. But the problem is not necessarily our offensive performance. We're, you know, at times it's it was entirely on Wilcox's strategy to suck the life out of the football, particularly not letting the offense really get on the field much in the first half to get anything generated in terms of momentum, and then really clinching down in that second half. We have to give Cal a ton of credit for that. But the real thing that sticks out beyond just the scoreboard at the end of the game is our turnover margin this season. I know we lost a lot of players that were key guys at forcing turnovers, making big momentum generating plays, but right now we just haven't had any, and we've been giving them to the other team.
That's without a doubt, Nick, and Oregon's both inability to create turnovers as well as the inability to prevent them has really been a problem this season. There were 3 fumbles in that ball game against Cal, 2 of which were lost. Johnny Johnson's and Tyler Shuck's. Josh Delgado also had one, but Oregon was able to jump on top of that. 3 fumbles in 1 ball game. That is absolutely not a good look for the program at all. And you can bet that that's something that was worked on in practice this week.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, going into UW, that they're definitely going to be focused again on ball security, but that comes with time and repetition. At least some of the positives that we did take away from the game is, I think early on, a lot of those reads, particularly in the run game for Tyler Shuck, were just happening so fast. He was immediately handing the ball off and the back was getting tackled in the backfield. And I think by the end of that game, he started seeing, hey, if I pull and there's 7-10 open yards every single play. But unfortunately, Oregon became so reliant on that, that it felt like Shuck was out there taking hits that was making me a little nervous that we might be seeing the backup by the end of the game.
It made me nervous as well. 13 carries for Tyler Shuck. That's one more than even the leading running back, Dye, who had 12, Verdell with 6, Habibi Likio with only 3, including a touchdown. 13 rushes, 53 yards for Shuck. That's not bad by any means, but it was definitely getting a little dangerous there near the end. You mentioned he took a couple of shots. You would like to see him not take so much. I think that's something that's definitely going to come with in-game experience for him, learning when to slide, when to step out of bounds, when to lower the shoulder. There's a time and place for all of it, and it's something that he's going to have to learn. Overall, though, not a terrible performance for Shuck. 14 of 26. That's a decent percentage, 231 yards and a touchdown. Not an ideal quarterback rating, but that is what it is, especially at the college level, and I think we all know that. Rushing was, again, not ideal for Oregon, and I think that's part of what Cal did so well, is they were able to stop the Oregon running attack. The leading rusher for the Ducks, Travis Dye, 71 yards. Out of the 34 total carries, 137 rushing yards for the Ducks. That's something that, you know, Mario Cristobal is going to want to have shored up a little bit, considering that he is the run first kind of guy that we know him to be.
Yeah, and it was, you could definitely see the Ducks trying to impose their will at the line of scrimmage. The problem again was a lot of the scheme Wilcox really had. I'm not sure, without seeing the full end zone view of the film, I can't tell you if it was necessarily a gap exchange scheme, but I know that the way the defensive linemen were just screaming towards the running backs were really putting the quarterback in a really difficult position where, you know, you had a split second decision of, is he coming for me or not? And it was very clear after the first couple gives that Cal was going to force Shuck to beat them. And unfortunately, we became too reliant on it and we couldn't get our backs that momentum they needed. Dye was huge, not just in the run game, but the pass game. But, you know, getting that consistent ground game going, it's just, especially with the plethora of backs Oregon has, it's frustrating. But, you know, again, this, I think a lot of people are losing sight. You don't just replace your entire offensive line and your quarterback and just expect everything to go humming. We are very lucky to have seen, you know, the first couple of weeks go off. I think most people just, our expectations got so crazy high, but this team has not really learned to gut through a tough road game yet. And it'll come. This is a great season to at least have these moments to learn and to grow from, because moving forward in future years, you know, this is some stuff that could get, you know, a lot of people discouraged and, you know, get a lot of people on the team kind of, you know, going in different directions. But everything we've heard out of the team this week, starting with Tyler Shuck on down, these guys just sound like they're getting back to work. They're excited for the opportunity this week to play the Washington Huskies, and they've still got a chance at a Pac-12 title. Everything they wanted coming out in this season is still available, and it's all in their hands. So they just need to take it, learn from it, And it, like we said last week, not let it beat you twice. And I don't think that's what happened in this game. I think we had a team that's just beginning to learn what it was like, just like in 2016. But thankfully, we're not going to have to see as many of those bumps. And this team can compete with anyone. You know, that 2016 team, you couldn't say that every game. You couldn't say that at the kickoff of every game. And, you know, thankfully, with only two more weeks left of this regular season, and then we'll see whatever the postseason offers. You know, we really have no idea what kind of growth this team still has left. We've still just seen them kind of learning to get their feet on the ground. So, you know, and a lot of these guys are five games into their career. We forget that really quickly. And, you know, I'm proud of them still for hanging in there. I know a lot of people are upset, disappointed, a lot of things, but they will learn from this. And if they do, they're going to come back a much better team.
I think there are three stats from this ball game that kind of tell the story. And I think these are pretty important, especially considering who this Oregon team is. We'll go through them one by one. And I just want your opinion on each. First and foremost, third down efficiency, Oregon, 4 of 12 on third down in this ball game.
Yeah, I mean, here's the real disappointing thing about third down efficiency too. When you combine that with a yards per play, you know, without taking into account penalties, which were a huge problem in this game.
That's coming up next. Don't worry.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just saying when you have penalties that lead to long third downs in situations that don't necessarily show up on the stat sheet, we had too many of those that put us in unmanageable third downs. And then, you know, you see 6.1 yard average per play. You know, that's you should be able to get a first down in three tries. You know, and the problem was, again, the first half, we couldn't generate any momentum, and Cal held onto the ball for the most part. And unfortunately, you know, you don't get third downs, you get sent off the field and the punt team comes on, and you know, happened one too many times for Oregon.
The next important category, you already mentioned it, penalties. Oregon, 9 penalties for 60 yards. Just for comparison, Cal only had 4 for 33.
Well, I don't like to blame a lot on the refs. I barely, you know, it's, but this season, everyone knows the Pac-12 refs are a joke. I'll say it. And it is what it is. Both teams have to deal with it. But particularly the defensive pass interference on Williams, that
terrible.
You got to look at that in the film room and kind of, you know, I don't throw it away. There's things you can learn, but that's a garbage call in Division I football. And yeah, there were a couple of those where just wondered what is going on here. And I think everyone in the audience at home was really frustrated, and, you know, reasonably so. Whether those penalties were deserved or not, they were there were just way too many of them, and it killed our momentum.
It absolutely did. We already talked about the turnovers, 2-0, so I'm not going to mention that any further than I already have. The last statistic that I think is so telling about this ball game, and it really shows how Cal was able just to kind of choke out Oregon at times. A stat that wasn't concerned about when you played, Nick, for Oregon, but time of possession. It's proven to be important for this generation of the Oregon Duck football team, as they are a team that likes to command the rock. 23 minutes and 57 seconds for Oregon, 36 minutes and 3 seconds for Cal. That is just about owning 2/3 of possession for California. You know, that's something that Mario Cristobal isn't happy about.
No, but I'll tell you exactly why our teams didn't have to worry about time of possession. And it's very rare for a football team to have this. There's only a couple schools out there that can say this, but our defense had a 2-deep that we could trust every single person on that field as a backup, and even some third stringers to go out there and see very little, you know, very little, drop off in play of the overall defense. And when you're able to do that, that definitely offsets that time of possession clock. But the other reason it didn't matter is our defenses generated a lot of turnovers. And when you generate turnovers, that time of possession doesn't matter so much. But the problem was, is Cal did a great job protecting the football. Their game plan was to hold onto the ball for these extensive 14-15 play drives and just eat up yard by yard by yard. And this defense was getting too tired. They're too young. You know, you can't keep them out there on the field the entire time. So time of possession did become a huge deal in this ballgame.
Nick, that's just a look at some of the statistics that I think made this ball game. Unfortunately, none of them go Oregon's way. That is what it is, though. There's only so much that can be done about it. You heard my meta spiel at the beginning of our podcast today. There's not much more that can be done besides looking at this, taking it in, learning what you can learn, and moving on.
Well, and we can do what we can do to control our attitudes. And as I did last week, we've made an adjustment with the headphones going into the next week. We've gone back to the original I've been using this season. So while these are, I really like these, Sam, but another set gone. We're moving on. Positive attitudes. We're going into my favorite week.
Oh, and what week would that be, Nick?
It is officially hashtag Husky Hate Week. That was our first episode, wasn't it, Sam?
It was our first episode. We both sat down over the computer, but Skype, not able to see each other's reactions to every silly thing that comes out of our mouths like we are now. But yes, indeed, we had a great Husky Hate Week episode. We were able to talk about the rivalry and talk to the great Kenny Wheaton, whose jersey I'm wearing here today.
Yeah, and you know, the great thing about the visual medium over just the audio medium, if you're listening at home, you can't see this, but I get to throw you the dubs down right here on the screen all day long, and couldn't do that last year, but last year we did get to talk to Kenny Wheaton, which was pretty special, a very important play, which we know everybody's talking about. We hope if you haven't checked that out, you go back and listen to it. We have it available for you on SoundCloud, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you listen to Once a Duck, we've got that interview available for you, but and we even have that broken up so you can just hear Kenny talk about the pick if you want. What a great moment. And, you know, really, we'll talk about it a little bit with our guest later, but one of Oregon's best rivalries.
Oh, absolutely. Oregon's got a couple of them, but this one against Washington is one of the best. You can look at games from the past. You can look at how these teams feel about each other or just what's at stake this weekend. What is at stake is a berth for the Pac-12 North in the Pac-12 championship game. The winner of this game, well, they're going. And that's as simple as that. As far as I know, it's basically that simple, Nick. If Oregon wins, they're in.
Well, you know what? And it's the same thing for UW. Or if by any chance before, you know, this airs or leading up to kickoff, if UW can't play, they're automatically in, Sam. So, I really hope the Huskies want to actually prove their West Coast dominance on the field and not just have an easy bye right to the title game against likely USC.
Well, Nick, I'm somebody who always roots for competition. I hope that this indeed would happen. That would be a very tail between the legs move from the Huskies, if you will, to decide not to play this ball game. It is something that could happen. And of course, during the COVID time, anything is a possibility, but as far as it looks right now, at 1 p.m. on Fox on Saturday, there should be a game between Oregon and Washington.
Well, and another important detail is because of everything going on this year, this will be the Huskies' first road game. And for, you know, a first road game for a new starting quarterback, a new head coach, you know, I'm interested to see because who knows what will happen. Who knows what Oregon team might show up, but also who knows what Washington team might show up. We haven't seen them show up on the road because they haven't tried it yet. And we just saw a Stanford team last week who is now sent to just go live on the road, has no home field advantage even for practices and has to practice around Seattle high schools. They went in, they took care of business, and they established dominance over UW in their own place. And even though the Huskies have been pretty good at comebacks this season, they weren't able to mount one. And Stanford was able to hold on and kind of choke the life out of them, I guess. You know, that defense played pretty solid, but it was just like Stanford was just able to roll over them with that physicality power. So that's something I really hope to see translate into what Oregon can do on offense this week.
The Ducks are going to have to do a couple of things for sure. I know we're going to get into our exact keys for the ball game a little bit later on, but something that I can tell you will be hugely important will be running the football for Oregon. They cannot have a ball game like they did against Cal, in which they are only able to account for 137 yards rushing on the ground. Oregon's going to have to establish that run early on. It's going to be the key, one of the keys to this ball game. I guarantee you it's something we bring up later on, strictly because it is going to be so vital for Oregon to be able to pick up yards on first down, which of course we know running the ball is one of the best ways to do that, especially if you can get it going relatively consistently. Another reason, though, Oregon should come out and punch Washington in the mouth. This game is going to be won by the tougher team this week. I think that that's just the simplest way to put it. Whatever team comes out, grits their teeth the hardest, and can throw a punch the fastest and the strongest is going to win this ball game. Rushing the ball is a great way to do that. I think it's going to be huge for the Ducks this weekend against the Huskies.
Yeah, another thing I think that's going to be huge is this team being able to generate their own energy at home. We've seen that on the road, it's been difficult for them to do it, but in the confines of Autzen Stadium, they have to be able to bring their own juice, raise those levels up, you know, get that shout going in the fourth quarter. We need leaders to step up, and they have to be the ones to be those fans, to be bringing that energy this week, because all the home field advantage we have is going to be entirely from the energy our players bring. And if you said, if like you said, they come out, smack them in the mouth, just run out there with so much energy that UW doesn't stand a chance to get their momentum back from losing it against Stanford. I mean, I'm telling you, if they really do come out and they control the football, they don't have any silly turnovers, and they stop the run, this could be a great win for Oregon and something that propels the program, not just into the championship game, but into next season.
Oregon is looking for that big victory this weekend. Well, let's just put it this way. They're due for one.
I mean, we're all due for one at this point, Sam. Watching back-to-back Ducks losses is unusual for all of us. You know, it's been a while since the 2016 season, like we said, where it felt like winning or losing was something you started to get used to. And that's just not a feeling Oregon Ducks fans are going to get comfortable with, particularly with everything Coach Cristobal said and the recruiting that we've been doing. You know, the expectation is that this team in terms of talent can play with anybody. And, you know, I think it's been that way on the field. It's just a matter of getting guys to step up, get experience in leadership positions and cutting mistakes.
Nick, here's a quick question for you, something that I think might be a little fun trivia-wise, let's put it this way. Do you know when the last time Oregon lost back-to-back games was?
I'm going to guess it was 2018.
Yep.
And I believe it was Wazoo and Arizona.
It absolutely was a loss at number 25, Washington State, a game I was able to go to. Fun trip. Fun tailgating, not so fun a game, 34-20 loss. And then at Arizona, well, 44-15 is all you need to know. That one wasn't very close at all for any intents and purposes. But since then, Oregon has not had back-to-back losses until this season. Hopefully, we don't see the first season with three losses in a row, and since I don't know how long.
Well, the comforting thing is it was back-to-back road losses. So, you know, again, that's another thing. It's, I believe these young players that got to experience those things, particularly the freshmen and sophomores that will be coming back there for another trip, hopefully before the end of their career, will remember what it was like to play in Research Stadium and Memorial Stadium and bring that energy and remind those young guys that come behind them that, hey, when you go down there, you don't understand until you do it just how hard those games can be to win. And it's hard to win any road game, but especially in conference in the Pac-12.
Nick, you were able to play against this Washington team a few times. You are a guy from the state of Washington, currently living in the state of Washington. You are in close proximity to Huskies quite often, whether you like it or not. What are some things that you think are on these Oregon players' mind this week? What are some of the things that were said about Washington? What are some of the things that are said, some good bulletin board material? Anything that can get this team a little extra excited to play their heated rival this weekend?
Well, man, in my time, even though it wasn't necessarily a close segment of the rivalry where we were in the midst of a 12-0 run against the Huskies, and even though my redshirt year, I did see their 0-12 season, it was always a game that, especially the local guys, the Oregon and Washington Ducks, they You knew to get up for it. I mean, Coach Kelly was always about faceless opponents, but once we got in that O-line meeting room, you know, Coach Greatwood would establish at the beginning of those practice weeks that this was a rivalry, that this was, you still practice with the same level of intensity and focus and studying, but man, it's got a little extra to it, particularly when you're going on the road in those environments, you know about the fans. This is a very, very different year, of course, but those things still remain consistent. And this rivalry is huge in terms of the past 4 years going back and forth. If we can get another streak going consistently, I mean, this wouldn't just be great for Oregon. I mean, it could really hurt Husky football to just be derailed after, you know, they had all the hope going into last week's game that maybe they were looking ahead to Oregon. So now we have a game where it's also the first time in a long time that both these teams aren't ranked.
That is so true, Nick, because last year you had the rare situation, not necessarily a rare situation, but the fun, exciting situation of both teams being ranked the same in 2018. 2017 and 16, Washington was ranked both times. They were ready to go. 15, 14, 13 on back. You know, Oregon was ranked for quite a while there. It is going to be an exciting matchup, ranking or not. What we love to do here, we all know we love to do it. We do love to address some old games, go back in the history books a little bit. We did this quite a bit last year, so we're not going to spend too much time on it this year. But as always, Nick, I have to ask you, do you have a particular Washington memory that's sticking out just a little extra today?
Oh, man. Well, we'll talk about what it's like to play at UW a little bit with our guest a little later on. But I got to play there in what was the last game in Husky Stadium before they removed the god-awful track, which I love to tell people. But I remember right after that game going and finding a couple players to shake hands with that I knew were Washington guys. You know, the Alameda Ta'amu mainly, because you know, battling that guy in his senior game, his senior year kind of ending and never getting to, you know I'd battle him again. Wanted to respectfully shake his hand. And then as soon as, you know, those few respects were paid, several of us busted out into na 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 na. Hey, 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 goodbye to Husky Stadium for a couple of years. And that awful, awful track that they had, just, I mean, it was great to keep those fans nice and far away, but man, oh, it was an eyesore for sure. In what I will admit is a pretty awesome venue, at least location wise. I mean, the stadium sucks, but, right? Hey, we were there last year. We enjoyed ourselves a lot. We got to see a lot of those players after, tell them, hey, go get you a Rose Bowl ring. And they did. And, you know, I always will have great experiences there, but hey, past couple of years, it's been a lot harder than it was in my days.
I can imagine that is true. I don't even have to imagine that is true. I've actually been at the last few ball games, and I can tell you, yeah, they've been a little tricky. The overtime ball game in 18, and then that one that came down to it in 2019. Nick, we've spent a lot of time talking Oregon Cal as well as Oregon Washington. I know we're going to have our predictions and our keys here coming up in our final segment, but I think we have something to get to before that.
Yeah, I'm really excited because, as we said, we told that team, hey, go get your Rose Bowl rings. And one of those seniors who was able to go out with a Rose Bowl ring joins us now, and that's Bryson Young. Awesome. So joining us now, we have a 2020 Rose Bowl champion, Bryson Young. Congratulations. Before we talk too much about that or your career at Oregon, what really attracted you to the game of football?
Oh, wow. Honestly, just growing up, really my dad played football. My dad went to Oregon for a bit, and then he played in the NFL for a few years. So he definitely had a big impact on why I love football. You know, whenever there was a football around me or some type of football helmet, I'd always wear it as a kid and just kind of tackle myself in the living room. So that's just always, it's just been in my blood, you know, I guess. So.
Yeah. Man, Bryson, you got offers from some top-end schools when you were coming out of high school, SC, UCLA, just to name a couple. You ended up coming to Oregon. You became a Duck. What went into that decision? Why did you end up deciding to spend your career in Eugene?
Yeah, definitely the coaches at the time had a big impact on my decision, mainly for who they were away from the field. They actually, you know, cared about you as a person, and, you know, it wasn't fake. You could actually see it was genuine. Especially compared to other schools that were recruiting me. So that was definitely a huge factor in why I chose to go there. So, yeah, that was definitely a huge factor.
So during your time in Eugene, you had to work your way out into the field. And even though you played in all the games of that 2016 season and you guys took your lumps, you worked your way up to a spot as a senior where you were a leader for that team. And you were a guy that was dependable on that defense. Talk a little bit about what it was like, you know, kind of working your way up to that role.
Oh, man. Well, it was definitely tough. You know, it was not the road I saw when I, you know, first committed to Oregon at all. I don't think anybody saw that. but looking back on it now, it was definitely worth it. And I wouldn't change anything because I learned a lot about myself as a person. And, you know, us as a team last year, we learned a lot about each other. And that really propelled us all of last year to, you know, be able to do what we did. And, but yeah, it was tough to work up to that because, you know, there's definitely a lot of times where, you know, you just kind of question yourself, and it's especially that 4-8 season or even the year after that, you know, when we had new coaches and, you know, that was definitely a tough time for everybody. But it was, you know, looking back on it now, I wouldn't change anything really.
But. Bryson, you flourished in the Avalos system your senior year. You played that position all season long and you played it so well. What was it about that position that fit what you brought to the football field?
Yeah, you know, it was just, I didn't have to think as much as compared to the other two systems we had previously. And the technique, the way he taught it, it was just, I just fit right into it. And it's actually interesting because with my freshman year, we were in a 4-3 defense under Brady Hoke. And so I was used to my hand in my dirt, in the dirt, you know, 3-point stance. And once we had Coach Taggart and then we had Jim Levitt and switched to 3-4 defense, I'd never been in 2-point stance before. So learning that the last 2 years before Avalos was tough because I was not used to that at all. You know, pass rushing from 2-point compared to 3-point was definitely something new. So having those 2 years and kind of working with that really paid off when Coach Avalos came, and his techniques of how he taught it made it so much simpler, and it was, it paid off.
You made a lot of plays in all of those schemes, but probably none bigger in your career than that fumble recovery in the Rose Bowl. Could you talk us through that play and what it was like, what happened?
Oh, man, it was quick. You know, it's crazy because the start of that drive, it was the start, I believe it was the start of the fourth quarter. And we were in our corner of the end zone. So all of our fans were down there. It was loud. They just got done playing shout. So our defense was, you know, hyped. And then two plays in a row, Jonathan Taylor had probably his biggest runs of the game back to back. And we're like, oh man, like they started on the 1 yard line. They're almost to the 30. And then, I can't remember the play we called, but we knew exactly what play they were going to run. And it was that quick fly sweep, jet sweep that they kept doing all day. And I don't think we expected, usually they cut it up quicker the whole game. But for some reason, they kind of pushed it out wider. And then Brady made a great play. And as soon as I saw Brady make that hit, it was mainly the hit. It was like, dang. And then I just see the ball. I'm like, okay. I just naturally fell on it. And at the bottom of the pile, everybody was fighting for it. But I was making sure, like, no, there's no way I'm getting rid of that. No one's taking this ball from me. Not at all. It's not happening. And I came up with it. And that was just a crazy moment. Because, you know, Brady caused fun, you know, Brady was my roommate. So it was kind of crazy because we'd been talking about making plays like that all year. And we both dreamed about playing in the Rose Bowl. So like for that to happen right there was insane. Yeah, we're going to talk about that forever. So that was pretty cool. That was a pretty cool moment.
You mentioned dreaming and fantasizing and daydreaming about playing in a Rose Bowl someday. You over your career started with that, as you mentioned, that 4-8 season, and then 4 years later you're a Rose Bowl champion. Talk about the glow up that the conference champion Oregon Ducks went through. What was it like going from the bottom of the Pac-12 North to the top of it over those 4 years?
Oh man, it was wild. You know, it was from every every part of it was wild. Like last year, beating Wazoo for the first time in 5 years, you know, that's just, you know, you get so tired of hearing them, you know, they have bragging rights, you know, of course, and just constantly hearing that, you know, UW always, you know, it's always been tough with them. And it just, my freshman year, I played more than my sophomore and junior year. So defensively, I had more experience against those teams. So last year, I really had 3 years for that 4-8 season sitting in my mind. And it was just fresh in my mind last year, especially when we played Washington, because my freshman year when we played Washington, you know, we all remember 70-21 at home. You know, that's something, you know, I'll never forget. You know, that was just not that was not Oregon football at all. And I just kind of carried that chip on my shoulder going into last year, and then winning the Rose Bowl. I mean, if I were to tell myself 4 years ago that we'd be Rose Bowl champions after that 4-8 season, there, I mean, that's, I don't know, I would not believe that in the slightest bit. But yeah, that was truly a dream. And in 2017, when we played UCLA, you know, that was my first, you know, actual collegiate game at the Rose Bowl, but I didn't play a snap in that game at all. And that killed me because, number one, I'm a competitor, and we lost that game, so it hurt that I couldn't, you know, help the team or anything like that. But at the same time, it was the Rose Bowl, and, you know, I've grown up in Southern California my whole life, so since I was, like, 5 years old, I've dreamed about playing in there. So when I didn't play at UCLA, you know, that just killed me in the locker room after, you know. And the craziest thing is, you know, even though we won the Rose Bowl, I had the same locker that I had for that UCLA game in the corner, and where after the UCLA game, I was bawling my eyes out because, you know, and then we win the Rose Bowl, and yeah, so that was probably the craziest thing for me.
But what's that like, being a senior and going out, you know, your final game is finally that kind of fruition moment of all that hard work put in? Just, you know, what does that feel like? Because I got to win one as a junior, come back the next year, you know, but for all our seniors, I just remember that moment just being such a special send-off for them. And we're all just so happy to be able to give that to them. What's that like being in that position?
Yeah, no, that was awesome. And mainly because, you know, it felt good that, you know, with that class, you know, with – you know, everyone from that 2016 class, even the, you know, the redshirt seniors from that 2015 class, who've also been through a lot, you know, for us to all end on that felt amazing, because we all stuck together. No one, you know, no one in those classes transferred that were on the Rose Bowl team. You know, we all stuck together through everything. And, you know, that just, I mean, that made our bond even stronger. And more importantly, it was great to finish like that because we wanted to leave a legacy for the younger guys, you know, like, you know, hey, we're able to do this, so we know you guys could for sure do this in the future. So, like, that was really the biggest thing, was kind of leaving a legacy for them. So that was really awesome.
Besides just being able to perform week in and week out on the football field, what are some other things that spending time in Eugene and in the state of Oregon really either helped you understand or brought to your attention? What are some things that you learned while spending time at the University of Oregon?
Oh, yeah. You know, helping out in the community was probably the biggest thing. I did so many community events, and, you know, just kind of helped me grasp on, you know, the perspective of, you know, what other people are going through. Like last year, I went on a service trip to Jamaica. That was life-changing. To say the least, you know, that was awesome. We went out there to help build a basketball court out there, and for this school out there, and that was awesome to go to a country like that and meet the locals and work with them. That was awesome. I did so many events like that in Eugene, you know, whether it was, you know, going to homeless shelters or, in, you know, things like that. I thought that was the biggest thing. To let people know that, you know, even though, like, they know us as, you know, football players for Oregon, like, you know, we're also humans too that actually care and will give back, you know. So I thought that was important to relay that message, you know, and kind of use our platform for that. So that was probably one of the biggest things I learned while being there.
Yeah, you talk about a lot of things that, you know, are so important to that Oregon culture, you know, the O'Heroes program, all the kinds of outreaches. What are some of the things that you've seen Coach Cristobal kind of instill into that culture of that team? And how has that left an impression on you today?
Yeah. You know, it's as soon as he came into, you know, as soon as he was head coach, we saw a media change in the culture, completely different change. You know, we really, in terms of in-house, you know, he wanted us to have a stronger connection as, you know, like with our brotherhood. And it was just important to know, you know, everybody on the team. Because usually, you know, when you're on a team, you kind of hang out with either, you know, your friends that you know or friends in your position group. But when Chris Ball became the coach, you know, everybody knew, I was hanging out with old linemen and, I'm a defensive end, outside linebacker, hanging out with old linemen, kickers, all the, you know, people that, you know, really, it wasn't, we didn't have that bond the 2 years, you know, prior to that. So that was one of the biggest things he instilled in us was that, and that helped us with other things, like, you know, with going out in the community and just kind of being more open to doing things like that, instead of just kind of being closed in shelter, kind of worried about yourself. He wasn't about that. So really the brotherhood aspect and then that branching out into the community was probably the biggest thing he instilled in that culture for sure.
Bryson, so many people have their own view of Oregon football, the Oregon football team, the men that make up that team. Who are some of the guys that's personality will stick with you? Who's somebody who may be different than you think fans perceive them as, or somebody who's just bound to give you a funny anecdote or story every time you see them in the locker room?
Oh, man. Whew. Yeah, you know, there's a long list of those guys, but, you know, I'll start out with my roommate Brady. You know, he's, you know, I'm not sure if, I mean, a lot of people obviously know who he is and what he does off the field, and you know, he's tremendous in the community. Shoot, we inspired each other, you know, to, you know, both go out, hey, let's do this, man, or hey, there's something going on this week and let's go do that, you know. He was always about, you know, he was never about himself, so he was always out in the community trying to do something, you know, to impact people in a positive way. So, and that's something that people really should know about him. He's always doing that. Let me think, who else? I'm trying to think. So do they have to be on the team right now or do?
Whatever, you're up to you.
Yeah, well, we all know Jordan, Fat Mac. funniest dude in the locker room, for sure, by far. Anything he does, says, just hilarious. Even in meetings, whenever he says something in meetings, you know, it's just hard. You have to keep a straight face, but that's just impossible at times. he's a character for sure, but he's also a great guy off the field. And like Brady, he loves doing events that, you know, impact the community in a positive way. So he's definitely a fun guy. Even though most people, you know, he's a big guy, intimidating, I promise you, he's really easy to get to know. He's a great guy. And there's a lot of guys like that on the team.
Yeah. We've had Brady Breeze on our show as a previous guest, and we got to talk to him what it was like, you know, making that decision to opt out. What do you see this year with that kind of leadership void that's left by, you know, all those opt-outs that were guys that were definitely leaders of the team that, you know, have to make the best decision for themselves right now, but leaves a couple of young guys to step up? Who do you think those young guys can be?
Right. You know, and you know, last year when I was able to see, you know, all the young guys that brought in that played a lot last year. And, you know, we kind of told them directly, like, hey, you guys are, you know, you guys are going to be the future. You know, you guys are the future leaders of this team. And, you know, even though you guys are freshmen right now, it's time to, you know, get into that role, you know. And, you know, obviously guys like Kayvon Thibodeau, Mace Funa, particularly those guys were in my, you know, same position room. But yeah, they were leaders last year, and hopefully they can continue to be leaders throughout. You know, it's a tough season for them, but this is what's going to test them and their leadership. So hopefully they're able to do that. And even, you know, the O-line, you know, people, you know, you keep hearing that, you know, the O-line is, you know, young and inexperienced, but, you know, those guys, a lot of those guys have been here last 2 years, some 3 years. And so they've seen everything. They've been through a lot as well, you know, and the guys that they've been behind, tremendous leaders, you know, that whole line, you know, and they are just as good leaders. You know, they know exactly what they're doing. And they're not afraid to, you know, take part in leadership. So I feel like it's hard for people to see at the moment, but I promise you those guys are day in, day out, the hardest, especially online, hardest workers, and they're for sure leaders, for sure. I saw that last year immediately, so.
You spent 4 years in Eugene. Time has come to an end. Since leaving the university, though, what have you been working towards? What have you been spending your time doing?
Yeah, so when I left Eugene, I was signed with the Atlanta Falcons, and that was a great experience. Even though with COVID and everything, it was not a typical off season. Everything was over Zoom, so instead of having OTAs there in Atlanta, I was here at home. You know, we're doing drills and learn playbook over Zoom. We know we're having 7-8 hour Zoom meetings a day, you know, so it's that definitely was not, you know, ideal for anybody. But it was still a great experience to meet and talk to so many veterans and learn so much. And then when I finally got to Atlanta, I was only there for about 2.5 weeks, but that was also a great experience to just actually work, you know, physically work with, you know, guys that have been playing this sport forever. But you know, once I was released, it was definitely tough, but I'm not one to really just kind of, you know, fold over like that or anything. So I've kept working, and, you know, I'm working with my agent, you know, hopefully, you know, I'm blessed enough to be signed with another team, get it, you know, an opportunity to make a team. But yeah, I've been treating it as a day by day thing, you know. So yeah, that's kind of what I've been doing.
Yeah, and we all really hope to see you take the field again, hopefully with an NFL team here pretty soon in the next, you know, hopefully coming seasons. But with that, you know, a little bit of time off while you're working out, what have you been able to see of this year's Oregon teams, and what are your thoughts on what you've seen from the young guys stepping up out there?
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, for any Duck fan or anybody who's, you know, any alum, it's definitely tough to watch, especially, you know, Civil War or just any loss is tough to see, because those guys have so much potential, and you know, they are a young team, but you know, they are I can't wait to watch them this week against Washington, you know, to see how they respond, you know, to adversity, because that was one of our biggest things last year was how do you respond to adversity. You know, last year when we lost to Auburn first, you know, game of the season, it was, okay, how are you going to respond? You know, and I think these guys can respond and respond well. I want the leaders I was talking to you about to be afraid to lead, because as a young guy, sometimes you're afraid to just naturally, you're just afraid to lead because, you know, if you're losing, you're afraid what your other teammates are going to say, you know, that's just natural. But, I guess my advice to them would be, don't be afraid of that, because this is the time where, you know, you create what you're going to do in the future. So how you lead now is going to have a huge impact on Saturday and the coming seasons. So for them, they're just going to take it one day at a time. You know, we always said 1-0. That's what they got to focus on. You know, Civil War is over. Last week's over. Just focus on now. Focus on tomorrow's practice. And, you know, that's what they need to do. But I have complete faith in them. You know, a lot of people read a lot of negative things online. Just that's always going to be there regardless, you know. So they just got to focus on them and what they need, and just, you know, one day at a time. So I have complete faith in them, you know. So I'm not worried about them in the slightest bit. They're gonna be just fine.
Bryson, this week Oregon, Washington. You played in a few pretty historic games against the Huskies. You mentioned the one that didn't quite go Oregon's way your freshman year. You also had one your junior year. There's a pretty historic game as well as an awesome game last year up in Seattle. What are some of the memories that you have from the heated rivalry between Oregon and Washington?
Oh, man. You know, honestly, I always view that rivalry more as more like compared to the Civil War. I thought that's more of a rivalry, in my opinion. It's just the feel of it. You know, it's just something about when we go into their stadium or you see them run onto our field in Autzen. It was just something different in there. And, you know, when we beat them my junior year, that was, you know, what was it, 3 overtimes, something like that. It, you know, just that was awesome. I only played special teams that game. So really, I mean, if I were to say it's my most memorable thing, I guess that wouldn't be true, but that was definitely a great day. You know, I mean, I love seeing them walk off the field, not victorious. That's always a sight to see. And then last year, you know, when I actually played last year and we're actually up in Seattle, and, you know, I hadn't won there at all ever, you know, in my career at Oregon. So the way we won that, being down 2 touchdowns at one point, and it was kind of, you know, we were kind of uncertain that, you know, it was late in the third quarter. We're like, man, like this is, you know, this isn't going the way we wanted to. And then the way we pulled together as a team and pulled that out, that was the locker room after that. Crazy. Yeah, that's a rivalry. I like that better than Civil War personally. So, yeah.
Well, as a guy that grew up in Washington personally, I couldn't agree with you more. It's always been, even though when I was there, it wasn't much of an intense rivalry. Right. Even you'd still hear it from the fans. Even going into there, you'd still have to be looking out for the bags flying over your heads. But, you know, I've been to the last 2 games, just awesome games to be at. I was right behind Troy Dye when he throws the Dubs down. I'm just over his shoulder in that interview. I love that. So I got to ask, what does Dubs down mean to you?
Oh man, it means a win for us, really. You know, I did not know he did that until we're on the plane and you see it on Twitter, like, whoa, like, you know, I didn't even know he did that, but I love that now because that's going to stick. Because I think Dylan Mitchell started that 2 years ago when we beat them the first time, so that's kind of cool. That's kind of a trend now, so hopefully we get another Dubs down, you know, this weekend. So that'll be great to see.
Keep the trend going, baby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Folks, we've been talking to Bryson Young. Bryson, thanks so much for being willing to come on the podcast. We really appreciate hearing from you. Follow him on Twitter at Blackhawk32698. You guys know I already do. The podcast does as well. Bryson, thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate being able to hear from you.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Go Ducks.
Go Ducks. Wow, another fantastic interview. Thank you, Sam, for getting that. I know that was one you arranged personally, a guy in your age range there on campus in Eugene and somebody that you've gotten to talk to before. But moving on to UW, I think, man, like he said it there, man, I'm excited for this game. How about you?
I was excited beforehand. I was ready to get into this week. I was ready to be done dealing with the thoughts, feelings, and lasting effects of that Cal game. But, man, hearing Bryson be able to hype up this rivalry, he talked about how it even meant more than the Oregon-Oregon State game to him. That's exactly what I like to hear. That's the kind of fire I want. He had a great game up in Seattle last year. I'm hopeful this Ducks team can play just as well in Autzen this weekend.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm even excited to see what the Huskies can bring on the road. You know, their team is it's littered with former Ducks. You know, they've got Elijah Molden out there making a ton of plays, Alex Molden's son. And, you know, like Jackson Sermon, he's a guy that, you know, and even their, you know, their coaching staff, there's a lot of ties there in this game. And I'm excited to see how this team goes out and performs against what's probably going to be its toughest test in terms of talent so far. this season, and a team, you know, this is everything on the line for both teams. I think both teams have to come out expecting to give it their best shot and their best performance on the field. And man, we're going to see who's best in Autzen on Saturday.
I look forward to it. I know all of our listeners do as well. It's our final segment, which means, as usual, what we are going to do is we are going to run through our keys to the ball game, as well as our scores and predictions. I already talked about one key a little bit earlier, and that's establishing the run. And it's something that I think will be huge in this ball game against the Huskies.
Well, and it's going to be huge because the Huskies defense, I mean, it's going to be important to establish the run, because if you're forced to pass against these guys, a defensive backfield is top notch in this conference, especially, you know, with Oregon having so many opt-outs, you can definitely make the argument that UW has the best DBs in the conference. On top of that, those DBs give that defensive line a lot of time to get to the quarterback, and Zion Tuanala Fatui, I'm probably saying that wrong. They call him ZTF around here because they can't say it either in Seattle. So you got to keep him off Shuck. That's going to be one of my keys. It's going to be important to not just run the ball, but when you do get forced to pass important third down situations, and maybe when you want to surprise them early, you got to keep your quarterback upright. And if they can keep Shuck comfortable in the pocket, it's going to be a really good day for the Ducks.
Keeping Shuck upright and comfortable, establishing the run, those are some really good offensive keys, some things that definitely need to improve from the California game. On the defensive side, we saw quite a bit of improvement against California, only allowing 21 points after giving up 41 to Oregon State the week before. The rush defense, much better, held Cal under triple digits on the day, which was huge. The pass defense was better. There were some lapses, some missed calls, some calls that shouldn't have been made in the first place against that unit. But this is a unit that I at least expect quite a bit from. Diomedor Lenore, he's had quietly a very good season, has kind of shut down half of the field for Oregon. On the other side, Mikhail Wright, we know what he's capable of. He's got to step up and play his game, as well as the safeties, Jamal Hill, Verone McKinley, Steve Stevens, Anthony Bennett. We need to see some of these guys come out and be ready to play. Washington, they can move the football when they need to. Ask Utah. They got scored on in a hurry down the stretch of that ball game. Oregon's going to have to be careful of this Washington team. And I think shoring up some of those mistakes in the defensive backfield is going to be a major key.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we saw against Utah, UW's Dylan Morris will throw you three picks in a game. Our Oregon defense needs to force some turnovers, and it would be a great way to get it is by getting a couple interceptions. But the other thing, you know, we got to really focus on not letting any one of their, you know, running backs go off. Pleasant or McGrew, they split the carries up pretty good. The thing I get worried about isn't necessarily, you know, the defense missing tackles or, you know, even having the big busted plays like perhaps against, you know, Oregon State. But I am more worried that this conservative offense from the Huskies could do a lot of the same things Cal did in terms of eating up time of possession. While they've been pretty even with their opponents this year in time of possession, that offense, if it were clicking, would really take a lot of the time and the air out of the ball.
One thing that I think Oregon's also definitely going to have to do, and that's going to be get off the field on third down. They did a decent job of it against Cal. Cal was 7 of 21 on third down. Wow, that's a lot of third downs, first and foremost. 7 of 21 on third down. They were 1 of 2 on fourth down. On those two downs, you must get off the field if you're Oregon. Washington's got a conservative offense. They will try to choke you out the same way that California did to Oregon. The Ducks are going to need to be able to get off the field on third and especially fourth down.
Yeah, and we've talked offense, defense, but as always, key is going to be special teams. I feel a lot more confident now in our kicking game, being able to put field goals, 3 points on the board. You know, I feel a lot more confident in going into this week than, you know, maybe in previous weeks. But man, it's going to be so important for our kick coverage teams, and especially, you know, punt return. Everybody to be looking out for trick plays. We saw it last year. The Huskies tried to pull some foolishness with laying down in the end zone, which they didn't know was illegal on kick returns. They have to know with everything riding on this game, Jimmy Lake's going to be coming in with a bag of tricks. Anything he has in it is going to be a viable option to use against the Ducks in this game.
a guy I would love to see on special teams do something special, Mekhale Wright. We saw him with two returns for touchdowns last season. He's almost broken off a couple this year. I would love to see one of those get back to the house, or at least get a nice lengthy return or two that can set up Oregon with great field position. I think that special teams, well, they're going to have to be special this week.
Well, and you know, and for the opposite side, I'm hoping UW has a little special teams problem, because I would love to see Peyton Henry miss a couple more kicks. We already saw, for whatever reason, may have been our cardboard cutouts there, given their best efforts in Autzen Stadium to distract Jet Toner. But we've seen Autzen Stadium has not been friendly to field goal kickers this year, and I would love if the game came down to another Peyton Henry kick, baby. Come on, Peyton!
One way or another, I definitely see this being a game that comes down to a field goal one way or the other. And as you mentioned, I feel confident that Oregon's got a guy that can put it through the uprights. He hasn't missed anything yet. I don't know if he's capable of it. We'll see when the time comes. But Nick, it is time for us to give our predictions, our scores for this ball game. This is where we get held accountable for our knowledge of the game, our understanding of what we see out on the field. Lord knows you understand more than I do, but I can still throw a score out there and try my darndest. You're up first, though. Oregon and Washington, 1 p.m. on Fox. What's going down on the turf at Autzen?
Yeah, coming off what was probably my worst prediction this season. You know, the offense did not show up like I expected. I'm going bold into this week. I'm excited to see what this Duck team does to respond. You know that the coaches have been in their ear all week about what it's like, what they have to learn from these two losses. And I'm excited for a Ducks team that hopefully is ready to come out and just throttle a team that is not experienced on the road, that could be exposed. I'm ready for it. I'm going to call it. I think Oregon wins this game 31-17. Go, Duckies, Dubs, down.
Nick, I've got a very similar score. The minute you said 31, I got nervous. I thought I was going to have to hold up my sheet of paper showing you the score that I wrote down before we started. You know what? We're an Oregon Duck podcast. We side with the Ducks when we can. And right now, if I can't side with the Ducks, I will. I have faith in this team. I think that they bounce back. It's been challenging playing on the road, but they are back in the friendly confines of Autzen Stadium. Even if the crowd isn't there, it still feels better playing at home than playing away from home. This is going to be a tough ball game. I think both teams are going to go back and forth. I think both teams will hold leads for substantial parts of the ball game. It is going to be an absolute nail biter, but that renewed faith in Oregon's kicking game, I think, is going to come through for the Ducks this week. Final score, Oregon 31, Washington 28. It's going to be one of the best ones the rivalry has seen, and I think that it will lead to us seeing the Oregon Ducks in the Pac-12 title game.
Absolutely, and you know, it's my birthday weekend this weekend, and the only gift I've asked for is a couple of Duck wins, and we won't just be able to possibly see it on the football field, Sam. There's also going to be a men's basketball game against the Huskies. Right after that, we got a 1 p.m. kickoff, and then we got a 5 p.m. tip-off. I mean, I am so pumped for some Ducks kicking some Husky ass this weekend.
I am thrilled about it. I am really excited. We haven't had a ton of time to talk Oregon basketball on this podcast yet. You can bet that we are going to get more into that as the weeks come. What I will say, I've really liked what I've seen out of this Oregon team so far, basketball-wise. It always takes a little while for Dana Altman teams to figure it out. I think we know this. But the new guys that Oregon have brought in, the transfers, mainly Eugene Omorui, who did have a slightly down game against Eastern Washington. Obviously, we're recording this before the game on Wednesday, so we won't know what happens there. But Oregon has looked decent. They went out, they lost to Mizzou early, but they beat Seton Hall and then beat a pretty talented Eastern Washington team, a team that lost to Arizona and Washington State by only 3 points. Oregon was able to take care of business. I expect the Ducks to do the same. Washington, they've got some talent, that's for sure, but I gotta ride with the Ducks.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it was, we talked a little bit during that Eastern Washington game. We were texting back and forth and talking about it's pretty exciting to see a Dana Altman team that three games in the season is controlling the ball in what was, you know, a pretty solid opponent in Eastern Washington, which had a lead over Arizona and Wazoo at halftime. So encouraged by the things their men are doing. And on the women's side, the Ducks women right now have the longest winning streak in the nation. I think it's a 22 right now.
The Oregon Duck women are just so phenomenal. Kelly Graves has built such a great program there. It's not just one player, even though she might be the best. It's not just a one-woman show anymore. Oregon, well, they are stacked. They had a five-star caliber recruiting class that is coming in and absolutely playing fantastic basketball. The returning stars are playing great as well. Aaron Bowley, Sedona Prince, both looking awesome. Every single game, these Oregon women, they deserve to be in the top 10, and they're there for a reason.
Absolutely, and I think we're only going to continue to see that climb if Oregon just keeps continuing to take care of business in women's basketball. But, hey, that's about all the time we've had. You know, we're excited for, you know, our Dubs Down this weekend's double special. You know, we get two games to root for our Ducks against the Huskies, and even though we can't be there, man, oh, that is such a great way to, you know, especially – you know, that second week of December, you just don't get many of these opportunities.
It's really rare. Usually this is the weekend reserved for Army, Navy, and maybe another straggler game or two. But this week, well, you get the rivalry, folks. Oregon, Washington, green and yellow versus purple and gold. I don't know how it gets much better than that.
Oh, I have a couple ideas. If we can pull off a win, and with the guests we have lined up potentially for next week, things can get better, Sam, but we'll have to wait and see about it. Until then, once a duck, always a duck. Go Ducks, baby.